We're going to feign a certain kind of piety and decorum, you know, out of deference to you two. But it won't last long, so.
We'll start out nice.
Yeah, start out real calming. Is there anything that drew you to participate in this thing?
The word awakening drew me.
Uh-huh. That's loaded, yeah.
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 What about you?
No.
I don't know. Okay. Do you meet every week, or how?
We meet 4 times a week.
Oh, 4 times a week.
Well, it's kind of like, do you want to wake up or do you want to fuck around?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the one at Wegmans the other night with all the same people, you go to different places?
Yeah, we loiter at various places.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So like Wegmans, you know, Wegmans, you can get something from the buffet and then go upstairs and hang out for a couple hours. No one's going to bother you. And we go to Panera on Friday night. You know, you buy chicken soup and a biscuit and you can hang out for a couple hours and no one bothers you. And Sunday mornings, we go over to Del Valle. You pay $7 or $9 for their buffet and you can hang out there for as long as you want. No one bothers you.
You can do breakfast and lunch.
You can do breakfast and lunch with the same fee, paying the same fee.
And then all about food.
Thursdays, we sit here at Pebble Hill. And then either, yeah, and bring snacks.
Where's Panera?
Panera's at the Weiss Market Plaza in Doylestown. Just,
oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's how we do it. It's low cost.
Mm.
Yeah, sometimes there's, you know, 6 or 7 of us, and sometimes there's just a couple.
And sometimes Jeff weeps in the room all by himself.
Yeah, I just sit here by myself and weep. Those are the best ones, when I get to weep all by myself. Yeah. So awakening is a very funny business, as you can appreciate, depending on whom you've read and what's going on in the meetup scene and the, you know, the yoga world and the Buddhist world and the channeling world and all these worlds you can get your hands on, right? The Pebble Hill world and the Course, hopefully, what is it, the Miracles?
Course in Miracles.
Course in Miracles world. And I was thinking about the other place that meets, Circle of Miracles, thank you. Yeah, and the Star group that usually meets here in the other building on Thursday nights. That's a big group. They have fun.
What a shape thing going here.
There is what?
Circle of stars.
Circles and stars, yeah. Circle, stars, and candy. How to discern or discriminate, you know, how all of these, let's say, sacred gatherings either reach a consensus or fail to reach a consensus as concerns the loaded word awakening, is it's a curious adventure, right? And our style of speaking about it and exploring the texture of consciousness and what awakening might imply is not so common, at least around here. It's not so common. So What about the word awakening, or in your own contemplative history, inspires you? And how do you frame it? How do you see it? Why would you, if it were possible, whatever it could possibly mean, why would you want it? What's in it for you?
I want to answer that without using a bunch of cliches.
Not easy to do, yeah.
No.
Right.
Hmm.
feel free to dive in there.
Yeah.
I just got an email yesterday saying, do you want to come to this? So I'm like, okay, I don't know what I'm going to, but I'm coming to this.
Yeah.
That's me that sent the email.
I hear you.
Where I'm at, and I'm just
right
exploring. So.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm always in search of something.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, you know, waiting kind of for something to click.
Right.
Or I went to a gathering on Saturday and I had a sort of energy work experience afterward. And the next day I found that my meditation, which I try to do every morning, mm-hmm. was really much deeper. And I don't know if that was because of the energy work, but,
yeah.
You know, and I thought,
we'll give it the benefit
of
the doubt.
I would like to go there all the time.
Yeah.
And
what was it about the meditation experience that was deeper or more pleasing to you?
That I was really in a place where I was just focused on the mantra and mm-hmm. not aware of anything else around me and lost track of time. I hadn't like set a timer or anything like that.
Nice.
Didn't realize how long I had been there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty wonderful.
That was pleasing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think of that as kind of awakening.
Sure.
Like being able to do that.
Yeah.
And being conscious of I don't know, I wanted to say something else, that something else is happening or available to us.
Right. Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. So would it, would it be fun, were that depth of feeling or that depth of presence were to be with you more often, on tap, if you will, on demand?
Yeah.
That'd be good, right? Mm-hmm. If you could have that on demand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you're in luck. It's hard to say why a particular meditation session or meditation experience reveals something that is noticeably, demonstrably more pleasing than former meditation sessions. You know, time of day, day of the week, the energy work, the efficacy of the mantra. Or maybe just some kind of magical shit that you have no control over, you know, came and visited you and revealed something that was typically unnoticed in day-to-day living.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's also it's difficult to be certain whether it was the presence of something that captured your attention or maybe it was the absence of something that captured your attention. It's not so easy to be clear about that. If our day-to-day identity and way of participating in what we call our life is done through the endless litany of self-referencing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Plans and to-dos and regrets and anticipations and past and future and how do I feel and health and money and everything you could imagine and all the reasons I might go to a psychic because, you know, things are just not going my way today or in this lifetime. And I really like to get a leg up. I'd like to be on a rebound. So this incredible cascade of self-identity, which births from moment to moment through the involuntary movement of self-referencing. So a meditation like that, which is certainly an enviable one, where the pressure of space and time and implication quiets down profoundly, because the habit of self-referencing and living in an imaginary world, mental world, is gone quiescent. So it's, you could say, by virtue of the cessation or the quieting down, turning down the volume on self-referencing as the demand of one's self-identity, one becomes now conscious, texturally aware, right, spatially aware of a different dimensionality. Yeah, a different quality of sensitivity arises when I'm not drowning in interest in myself, all of which is operating imaginarily through the movement of thought and identification and association. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is that's a kind of fun adventure as concerns this curious notion of awakening. Someone else might not, let's say, share your enthusiasm for that, and instead want to spend time and energy on, well, call it exquisite spiritual experience or psychic awareness or telling the future or being a healer or, right? Mm-hmm. Ways of embellishing the life with extrasensory gifts or extrasensory powers. Yeah. And you could say that even if such gifts arise, if they're cultivated and if they actually come true, you might find yourself satisfied or not quite as satisfied as you hoped to be, because that nagging sense of self-referencing is still got you. Yeah. Self-referencing is present whether you're winning or losing or special or not so special, whether you're in the company of friends or whether you're by yourself, either happily or not so happily. Yeah. So there's a, as you can appreciate, many disciplines and philosophies and cosmologies as concerns whatever life is and whatever humans are and whatever creation is and whatever consciousness is and whatever the absolute is and whatever light beings are and, you know, whether we are the children of the Pleiadians or if that's just maybe not quite true. And we can become confused or overwhelmed by this really unending cacophony of ideation of our so-called place in the world, and then try to find, you know, satisfaction or security or wisdom or knowledge or peace of mind or awakening in the midst of this field of imagination that we've been bought and sold and taught from before we were even verbal. Yeah. So it might be a little more dangerous, I mean that in a good way, to unravel from the incredible body of presumption that we bring to our experience as creatures, mind, body, time, space, emotion, longevity, birth, death, right? The whole Big Bang shebang. Yeah. To begin to see and investigate with a certain amount of interest and thrill, to see how one's sense of the world is manufactured and maintained by not really paying attention. A meditation like that, where a certain kind of cessation occurs, you're in a different field of attentivity, because the right pressure of self-referencing is quieted down. Mm-hmm. So it gives you kind of automatic, effortless availability to a different field of being nourished. And that field of being nourished is not circumstantial, it's not events. It has nothing to do with your clothes or your money or your car or your hair or your friends or your past or your future. It's the erasure of self that actually opens the window for something that is so profoundly nourishing, you don't even know what shelf to put it on. You don't know how to store it. Because it doesn't have a context. Yeah. So that's, you could say that's the bias, and there's a thousand others, of how this particular conversation rolls. Which is devotional respect of that quality of being that starts to see and feel and notice a profound tapestry of nourishing subtlety when the habit of self-referencing is quiet.
You should hear it, Jim. Just expand that update screen so nobody can see.
You can, which is kind of fun, you can learn, as in cultivate and repeat and literally exercise your quality of consciousness, quality of attention, quality of feeling tone, to become more acquainted with the presence of cessation. And then find what you find there. And what that shows you, what that reveals to you is yours. I mean, for anyone else to tell you what you should find there, what you hope to find there, why you pay someone to find there, that's really none of their business. I mean, it's really yours. So we can share a lot of fun things to share at the entrance ramp. Right? Which is great to do. But once you're on the ramp and the habit of self-referencing is quiet in you, then the rest is, it's yours. You want to call it love? Knock yourself out. You want to call it, you know, spiritual something or other? Terrific. I mean, call it anything you want. Doesn't matter, because if the referencing habit is quiet, it doesn't need a name. It doesn't need a reference. It doesn't need a context. So you're nourished, kind of counterintuitively, you're nourished by silence and vastness without an explanation, without an implication, without it having to have anything to do with the, call it the imaginary inertia of what you call your life. Because as that quality deepens in you, your life doesn't, it's not interfering. The imagination of your life and your appointments, what you hope to find and what you hope to avoid, is just not bothering you. So that freedom, which we can call freedom, or that awakening, if we want to refer to it in that way, is exactly this, is exactly what this is. Not elsewhere, not as a gift of the Arcturians, but you, it's this. And there's no effort need be made at all, though a lot of efforts are made, but no effort need be made at all for you to sip from the field of yourself. That's what we do. And we snack a lot. Because you got to do something. Snack and nap, yeah. This is curiously and remarkably profoundly available. Because we're not talking about moving from a place to a place or from a state to a state. you're not in a state. You're not presently in a condition. And so you don't have to negotiate with the imagination of that condition to cultivate or find yourself in a better or an improved condition. To imagine that you're in a condition or that you're in a state or that you can define and describe what present experience is, you can only do so hypnotically, histrionically, through metaphor. So we really don't know what presence is, what consciousness is, what life is, what earth is, what the cosmos is. We just don't know. We have words galore and we have disciplines galore. Maybe you're an anthropologist, maybe you're a sociologist, maybe you're a podiatrist. So you can build incredible bodies of knowledge, wisdom, reference, and be effective, either making a living or being a noted speaker or just being fond of being an insatiable reader, whether fiction, nonfiction, or what have you. So everywhere the mind goes that finds objects and subjects and textures and moods and movements and implications is a universe in and of itself, a kind of an autonomous universe that you just discovered. How is it that here we are, right, resting or sitting in a field of pure wonder or a field of pure nourishment, a field of bliss, dare I say, that is able to convince us of being small and local and separate and apprehensive and at risk? How does this do that? That's, you could say, part of the, you know, the yoga of inquiry into awakening. It is to use the vibrancy and the intelligence and the affection that you're made of to explore the texture of consciousness and how consciousness is revealing itself to you in the ways that it is revealing itself to you, and curiously what you make of it and the degree of loyalty that you give to what's appearing as thought, what's appearing as future, past, implication, sensation, emotion, security seeking of a million kinds. What is one's self-identity made of? Is it thought? Is it sensation? Is it emotion? Is it one's belongings? Is it the coordinates of space and the coordinates of time? Time by the watch, time by the mind? What's presence? When we take all of these things for granted, which we so easily do, in a, call it a consensus or conformist reality, that would have us be, you know, consumerist wage earners, right, of one or other political bent, then, right, we've taken on a moniker of identity which may not actually be true, may not be binding. And if that craving has arisen in you, as it has in pretty much everyone here, if that craving to discern and touch and discover, you know, what reality might actually be, not what I invariably imagine it to be, well, then what happens? Without the movement of self-referencing as thought and imagery and identity and plans and preferences and appointments and concerns and consternations and solutions, without that, what do you got? What's at your disposal. And if you find some profound invitations or profound visitations to be nourished by awakening or cessation or freedom from the banality of self-referencing, is that a world that you are happy finding? Would you want to return to that sensitivity? Or might we shy away from it, or disparage it, or not trust it, and zip back into the imaginary self, the one that's made out of ideas and references and appointments, regrets and calendars? Yeah. So it's really fun because you can make really profound discoveries along the way of the simplest kind. This, here we are. This is it. This is awake. This is awake, and this is all awake has to give you. It's exactly this. If we drown it out by being presumptuous and assertive, then that's the universe or the realm that you're bringing to the table. That's how you're, let's say, agreeing to participate in the wonder of being alive. And if you find yourself out of curiosity and craving, shying away or weaning yourself from the myth of yourself, well, now you've got quite a profound field of riches at your fingertips, at the tip of your nose. Do you really need knowledge? Do you really need wisdom teachings? Do you need ascended masters or, you know, mediums to give you information about stuff?
If you're a you, you do.
If you insist that you're a you, and as a you, you are suffering in some way, right? Malnourished in some way, insufficient in some way, then yes, you would crave for some kind of relief. And that relief could come in the form of alcohol and drugs and TV and meetups and mediums and even, you know, mantra meditation. Set me up.
Don't forget sugar.
Sugar.
Honey patty.
Always go with sugar. But you see what happens is that once we become loyal to the presumption of insufficiency, which means that you're the product of being in a state or you're the product of a condition, well, now you've kind of become self-entrapped. Because if you've convinced yourself that you're in a condition and that condition is somehow unsatisfactory to you, well then, you know, now you're ready to buy all kinds of snake oil to ameliorate and medicate the irritability, the insecurity of the condition that you've just imagined yourself to be in.
Desperate for snake oil.
And that's how, you know, so many groups and teachers, sincere ones and some not so sincere, enter into the, you could say, chronic codependent relationships by imagining that there's something that you don't presently have or that you are not presently already that, and so you'd benefit from an intervention of some kind. And I just happen to have the intervention because I've been to many sacred places and I have a Tibetan, you know, name, and a guru in India, you know, hit me on the head with a golf ball. And so I got all kinds of shit to share with you that you'll benefit from. But it's really not true. I mean, all that shit is true, but it's not like I have anything to offer anybody. I mean, I did all that stuff, but I don't have anything to offer anybody. And that's nice. It's nice to be what would you call it? You know, human, if we want to say we're human, and not to need anything from anyone or not to have anything to offer to anyone. I mean, talk about egalitarian bliss. Whew, this rocks. When you, as we explore the, you could say the nature in which personal hysteria is created, it's possible to be relieved from the implications of one's personal hysteria and discover a fountain of boundary-free consciousness or boundary-free awareness, which of which there is no other. There is no authority.
Does the hysteria really go away, or does it just continue and you just don't, it just doesn't have much traction? My sense is it continues without traction.
Okay, then that's what it's revealed so far. In other words, it's better to, let's say, be attentive and honor what it is that's being shown to you than to, let's say, seek, right, someone else's opinion of what might have happened to them. My, you know, to just to throw an opinion in there, this is a, well, it's a deepening process. It's a maturing kind of process. There may not be any space or time, but your consciousness doesn't quit. And what can be revealed to you through the ordinary movement of your life, which might include contemplative gestures like the inquiry into awakening conversation, you might find all kinds of interesting things occurring. One of them could be that, well, I'm still the same old neurotic kind of person that I have always known myself to be, but it just not, it's not as painful, which means there's less traction or less demand. And this doesn't quit. It keeps going deeper. It just keeps going deeper. Maybe it gets so deep, like right about now, right about here and right about now, that you got nothing. Really, the impulse to imagine anything at all as being defining, just so remarkably quiet that you don't have to argue with yourself. You don't have to talk yourself into or out of anything because you're free from the habit of referencing your way into the imagination of being anything at all. Right on cue. When we say something pithy, the bird pops out.
It's 20 minutes off of the hour.
See, I told you. When we say something pithy, the bird pops out.
The bird comes out.
That's right. Really. So I don't know. Those are some orienting remarks. What do you got?
I found it really helpful not to use suffering or when I go psycho as evidence that I'm not where I should be or haven't gotten there or anything. It just happens. Something happens.
What if what we call articulated experience is just a sweater. You're just wearing a sweater. It does not define you. It doesn't entrap you. You're not so, let's say, associated with what we refer to as body-mind with any loyalty at all. So even though we may bathe and go out in public and meet some new friends or whatever we do, it's not entrapping. And we can't possibly imagine what freedom from entrapment is, because even our imagination is, you can tell, conditioned by expectation, conditioned by comparison, conditioned by the subtlest implication of what if. Because that's how we process, right? That's how we process ourselves. That's how we create a context or coordinates for our so-called experience, is through assignment. But what if the entire, call it mechanism, which is a gift, I mean, it's just a profound gift, you know, it's a creative effulgence, this imagination, this quality of imagination and quality of identification. What if that were to become so quiet? You are no longer reaching into yourself or out of yourself for validation. You aren't creating any coordinates at all. That would no longer be freedom from something. That would be like kind of double freedom, because you're not free from a thing. But you're not free from the imagination of prior experience, hoping to find more palatable future experience. You're free from the sweater of consciousness in its entirety.
Not that that processing stops, you know, not that you should expect it to stop. Who knows, maybe it will stop sometimes.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
But the need to claim it can dissipate.
Yes.
You know.
The claiming, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's what makes you neurotic, you know, and crazy.
Yes.
It's all the claiming, you know. I mean, if there's something going on in the ether and you want to say that it's yours, well, that's gonna do something to you. It's going to hold you back.
Claiming is another great, let's say, synonym for self-referencing, for the profound capacity that we have involuntarily given to imagine ourselves in some kind of a context, bookended by the, you know, the what we were told was our birth and what we've been accused of as being the possibly our death. But we don't really know anything about our birth or our death, except what the, you know, what we've read or heard or what we've experienced by either giving birth or seeing birth or participating, you know, in the death of someone we know or don't know. We have that. Well, we might have a body of evidence of what birth and death might look like as concerns the right physicality. But we don't know if that's really defining with respect to the, you know, call it the absolute. If I say, what's going to happen to me? Well, it's too late. I've already taken on the identity field of myself as my life and my body and my mind and my stuff and my feelings and my spiritual progress so far. And I think, oh yeah, that's true. I think everything that I'm capable of imagining is actually true or binding or has an implication. Or that I should and could do something about myself. As long as we are hopeful that we can and should do something about ourselves, we are in samsara. Because we're going to find a million things right and a million things wrong, and therefore a million preferences and a million decisions or appointments, so that we can make things better than the way that we think or insist that they are when they're not. When they're not. So the whole matrix of craving collapses. What is it possible? What's possible to discover in your own autonomous experience without any authority, without anything or anyone being higher or better or more prescient or more godly than you? What occurs in your present experience with the collapse of craving? We don't have to renounce carnality in all of its luscious and insane ways.
Yeah, good luck.
And good luck anyway. We don't have to renounce carnality to sip from the fountain of the collapse of craving. There's no spiritual advantage that accompanies doing anything.
It'll only backfire anyway, right? Put an effort into it, there's going to be an opposing consequence.
Your first-hand experience is the teacher. Yeah. If I'm in charge, if I'm responsible, if I'm accountable, if I'm the doer and the decider and the chooser, if I'm the creator, that's pretty heavy shit.
Pretty arrogant.
Pretty arrogant. If you're not any of those, this gets pretty light pretty fast.
You got to give up a lot to really.
Well.
Seemingly give up a lot to really experience I'm not.
Yes, if.
Driving.
Yes, if you are subscribing to give up a lot, well, you'd better get to it. And you might notice in the process of giving up a lot or attempting to give up a lot, there's always more down the road than you've given up thus far. You can't ever run faster. You can't ever give up enough as long as you think you have to give up a lot or give up anything.
I'm not saying that you give it up, but there's a falling away of sort of the lie that you have control over what you're doing.
Yes.
And when that falls away, it's like, holy shit.
Holy shit is what you got.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. Yeah. And even such a, you know, well-spoken cosmology looks like time.
The whole thing is just, the whole giving up is just one thing.
There's nothing going on.
I mean,
you're not in possession of anything. You're not actually in possession of anything, nor have you ever been. So good luck giving it up.
But it feels like it. it feels like this weight.
It's imagined.
Exactly.
And it's not imagined in your past. It's only imagined here.
And that's, if you want to call it putting that on the altar and giving that up, I mean, that's about as far as you can go, because it's only happening.
Here is about as far as you can go. So either you bloom in situ, in presence, you bloom by having a cosmology, which implies time and space and things having had that might be, one might benefit from giving up. So that's just absolute hallucination, and you're welcome to it. I wouldn't take it away from you. It's, you know, poetically, I read everyone's poetry. You know, you got a hallucination? Let me in on it. I love them. Hallucinations rock.
What else do we do?
Well, snack.
Snack while hallucinating.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, the great, right, religious tomes like the Old and New Testament is full of the pressure and the implication of suffering from things and giving things up and the consequences of whether you're worshiping God in the right way or not the right way. I mean, it's just kind of like a crescendo of shame, blame, accusation, and, you know, consequence. Well, ye gads, who wrote that shit?
But, you know, it's so interesting because sometimes you come across something that it's like throws everything else into question. I remember the first time I heard, I am that I am. I'm like, whoa, hold everything. Stop. What the heck
Stop
is that?
Stop the presses.
What is that?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the rest of it is blah, 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 but, you know.
Yeah.
Like, what was just said there, you know?
Yeah.
So it seems like there's these things that are thrown in. And then if you look at, you know, Gospel of Thomas and things like that, then you find a few other things, you know. And it's like, well, did that just happen? Was that just some mistake? Or was that a message that somehow actually got through all this garbage to the present day?
Yes. Yes. Yep. We're thrilled, of course, when we touch, call it a profound contrast. Right? Something that puts a shifts the texture of our consciousness, of our familiarity with ourselves, of the cosmology that we've been living under without really understanding its boundaries or implications for ourselves. Mm-hmm. So you can hear something profound and it shifts the right, the assemblage point of your cosmology. So it turns out to be a memorable experience.
I think it's actually helpful to sit with various people or listen to other people because there's, you never know what's going to come across your awareness. Like maybe the same message but a different way to get them. Like we normalize things and get used to them and then they're not as fresh.
Yeah.
And it's nice to shop around a little bit and see what would resonate.
Yes. Novelty stimulates your right discovery mm-hmm. process.
The gazing thing, I'm not sure.
Yeah, the gazing thing is like, I don't know. Snacks?
Sign up for another gazer.
Yeah. Leave people alone. Stop gazing at them.
Whichever way you go, it's still an assertion, right?
Can be, yeah.
You know, debunking or asserting.
Yes.
It's sort of the two ends of the desire stick, you might say.
Absolutely. Yeah. You've found content. By finding content, you've actually found yourself. And I don't necessarily mean in a good way. See, by finding content, you've found the imagination of the content holder. That's what self-referencing does. the movement of thought and association and plans and preferences suggests the presence of yourself as an individual, as the I am that I am, the great I am that I am. And then you become extruded in psychological time instantly. So this whole process of content, association, reference, assimilation, assertion, is self, is suffering, is time. And therefore it appears that the irritability of separation or the irritability of being isolated as a creature is unshakable. Without the involuntary creation of the middle person, middle man, middle woman, middle person, this is just this. Perhaps it's beautiful. Perhaps it's terrifying. Perhaps it's vast. Perhaps it's profoundly local and intimate. You see, when the imagination of spatiality and the imagination of temporality relax, then you don't have a binding context for present experience.
I think the remaining mind bounces off the walls at that point. I mean, there's this reframing, trying to understand, cope with it, and this is all going on in the background as you are losing grip with. And that sounds, I don't mean losing grip in the way of going crazy.
Kind of. I
mean,
but maybe.
Speak for yourself.
You're losing grip with what you believed was the absolute truth of who you are.
Yes, sure.
So you're losing, that adhesion is loosening up a little bit.
Or a lot, yeah.
Reframing, it just seems to keep going on. Hopefully, to a lesser extent.
Uh huh.
Yeah. I mean, that's the time element. You know, that's the whole thing about time.
We can have a cathartic spiritual experience, either demonstrative or purely internal, that no one would notice. And our habit is to place that cathartic opening or shift in perspective into the context of our life.
Yeah.
And we'll do that for as long as the context of our life is the, you know, the defining, right, loyalty that we feel in possession of. What happens if this keeps deepening and deepening and deepening, and what you thought the context of your life was is no longer binding? Now what? Now you're not putting, call it cathartic or subtly demonstrative spiritual experience, in the context of how it's going to affect or should affect your so-called life. You can't even find your life. Or your life just goes on living itself and you're like, well, fine, I'll pull another sweater out of the closet today. Whatever you got. So if you're not body and you're not mind, if you're not space, if you're not time, if you're not craving, then, you know, this goes on. It persists. It loves to. But it's not defining you. And you can't place yourself in, let's say, the imagination of how that might feel. When the invitation and presence of contextlessness gets under your skin, that is, that's a new tonality. the rigidity of self and the rigidity of continuity takes a back seat. You're no longer inspired by the reflex to place things in the context of your life or to ensure future-oriented security. Now you're a little bit dangerous. And the models and messages of the various codependencies that we rely on to be in, you know, so-called relationship with the world, well, those start getting very thin. You might, you know, find yourself being gracious where you weren't. You might find yourself being more assertive where you weren't. You might find yourself putting up with less bullshit from your own mind or the manipulations of others. But do so with, you know, perfect ease, perfect grace, care, affection. Simply because the world isn't bothering you anymore. And if it's still bothering them, that's their problem. And you needn't do anything about it. You can't anyway, so why even lift a finger? When do we get to the part in the program we start talking about the Pleiadians? I don't know. Just channel something.
Supposed to channel them before.
We get to the part in the program where we're channeling some wisdom for you. Why are we so convinced that the dead want to send us any kind of message at all?
how do we know we should trust them?
How do we know we should trust them?
Really. I don't even trust living people.
I know.
Just because they're dead, all of a sudden they're trustworthy. Yeah. What?
Right.
Oh, yeah, everyone knows that, really.
Really. You know, it might be that if you do go through the pearly gates or whatever color they are, whether they're gates or not, the sign might say, "Don't fuck with the living."
Yeah.
So whoever it is that we think we're hearing from might not be who we think they are.
Yeah, they didn't get in. They're the rejects.
Who knows?
Sticking around to mess with us.
I think so. My actual experience supports that.
Leave the living alone. They're suffering enough as it is.
Yeah. More cryptic messages. Thanks.
I'm convinced it's an inside job.
It's got to be an inside job.
So I had experience one time. I thought I swore I heard mother from the room next door asking what that sound was, which was the sound of my father who had passed away. I said, "Oh, it's my sister coming home from Sue coming home from the shore." And then everything's quiet. Mom's visiting Barb. She's not there. Dad's already dead. Huh. And Sue's still at the shore. So it's just me.
Whoa.
Comforting mom who's not there.
Nice.
Who's still alive, mind you.
Uh-huh.
So how did I manifest her voice coming from the bedroom as if she were there to comfort me?
Right.
You ever talk to her about it?
No, I think I might have mentioned the story about it, but it did open up that things are not always what they seem to be.
Hmm.
You know.
And
then I let it go.
It's quite possible they never are what they seem to be. That could be worse.
Here's
where I leave
Let's
it.
Go with
if it has a purpose, I'm sure it will be revealed, and then I let it go.
All right.
You know, some fantastical, unexplainable, you know, unusual, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Okay, if it has some thing to reveal, it'll do so. But,
yes.
I can't really attribute that manifestation to anyone else, particularly the mother part.
Well, we can't nail it down, that's for sure. A lot of claims.
But the state I was in was sort of trance-like. You know, it was exhausted.
Mm.
Physically, yeah. Completely exhausted, but the mind was alert.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it was kind of an unusual right. combination.
Yeah.
So this was not at all involved
yeah, yeah.
You know, in
sure.
interfering with. It was just complete. It was like paralyzed.
Uh-huh.
I guess that's what trans people is.
Yeah.
But I guess the sky's the limit, like a radio, in a way. Radio One. What's on tonight? This.
Yeah, what's on tonight? Me, this. Oh, okay. Try to change the channel.
It's like Malkovich going into Malkovich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With special commentary from Dave.
From what? Dave. Presence being has a certain texture, it has a certain signature. The feeling tone of one's sentience, curiosity.
I feel like getting into bed at night with no other real distractions, but just, oh yeah.
Yeah.
If I stay awake long enough to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, that usually helps in going to sleep. You can get into that.
Okay.
Get into a good meditation and go to sleep. That was a very successful meditation, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah.
Really. Dedicated meditator.
Yeah.
Sure. Questions, feedback, anything? What you got? We don't want to just lull you into sleep, and you know, meetups are supposed to be vibrant and social and worth coming to.
That's right. You expanded your net, didn't you?
Yeah. We'll see.
You guys came from the meetup. You saw the meetup. Have you gone to others? I mean, others. Various things from meetup, other spiritual type things.
No, not spiritual.
Give it a shot.
I hope this doesn't count as spiritual.
Yeah, it doesn't count. If it was in that category, it must have been.
No, where are you going to get it?
We would have fucked up.
You know. Or it's, as soon as you define it, it's not that.
Hmm. Yeah, you got to put it somewhere.
Anti-spiritual.
Okay. They have to put it into a category on meetup. There's no way it can't go uncategorized.
Yeah, uncategorized.
Off the charts. It keeps moving around. You put your pointer on it and it jumps every year.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Non-self.
Try to steer away from that.
How long have you all been meeting?
This? Has it been what, 5 years or so?
The Night Sky Sangha birthed in the summer of 2010.
Yes.
Yeah. Before that, several of us here were participating in the Pebble Hill Sangha, which was more of a Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, kind of Buddhist meditation circle. That kind of morphed away. Dave still leads a group on Tuesday evenings that does sitting practice and movement and sharing practice of that, you know, sweet way of being together. And we do this weird shit. And like I said, we do actually meet 4 times a week, pretty much every week. You know, some of us come and go, depending on who's available and who's around. But, yeah. Awakening, if there were such a thing, is the simplest thing you could ever do in your life because nothing ever happened. And then it's one of the most arduous things you could ever attempt in your life because there just seems like such an inertia of baggage and identity that separates you from your own emptiness. So it's both. Yeah, and meeting frequently, well, it's a way of reinforcing an intimate and direct encounter with your own presence. In, as you could say, unperturbed a state as you're lucky to touch that particular day. Yeah. And doing it conversationally and socially is, I find it a very useful reinforcement. This is an open-eyed, interactive, conversational, deep, if not cathartic, meditation without having to sit on your own cushion with your eyes open or closed in a non-interactive manner. Hey, if it's awake, then it should be allowed to speak, right? If it's awake, then it can pretty much handle anything we throw at it. So why not be interactive and conversational and exploratory and humorous in the consideration of one's own autonomy? We're not always this soporific.
Yeah.
For some reason, we're doped up tonight. Maybe the food, yeah.
Best behavior.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can hear my stomach, but people aren't over here. That's what I was
thinking. Mm. General Tso's tofu will do it every time.
Joseph Goldstein put on another interview he did with Sam Harris.
Oh, he did? Another conversation?
Yeah, I think it's the third one, but it's been years since the others.
Joey and Sam?
Yeah, I didn't know before. He doesn't like claim to be enlightened or anything.
Joseph?
Yeah.
No, he's pretty chill around that, yeah.
Yeah, does claim to be, have seen through an experience of the self to some extent,
Yeah.
Just on YouTube. Lower level, if you will, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he just went out and answered basic questions about meditation and talked about some of the dangers of it, which I always...
The dangers of meditation? Meditation? You might become a pirate.
Well, he meant really intensive meditation.
Oh, yeah.
Being able to cope with, which some things can happen. It's rare, of course, but when they teach it for...
Well, Joey's seen his fair share of yogis at IMS go bonkers and have to be taken to the hospital.
Sure.
Yeah, he's seen it. So.
You do enough, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that water starts boiling, and you're not quite sure if you're okay, if you're not okay, or whether you should ask someone or not ask someone, and the water keeps boiling, and you think you can tough it out, and then you totally lose your shit, and then you have to be carted off in an ambulance to go get an injection. Yeah.
Is it the meditation, or is it what you're getting close to as you proceed through?
I think it's the combination, yeah, because those, long retreats, the three-month retreats are... Well, they're very intensive, You're doing a certain kind of voluntary sensory deprivation and building up a huge reservoir of, powerful Shakti, call it, or contemplative energy. And, if the dam bursts. I've seen them. They cart them off. Yeah. See you next week. Good luck at the hospital. Stop sitting so much. When I would...
It's got to be trying real hard to do something for it.
Well, you can, you should, it's hard, you know, sometimes it comes on so fast, you just can't, you know, pull the cork out of it. But I used to walk to town.
That are pretty wackadoo.
I would literally walk to town, you know, and go out to eat breakfast and walk back. And, you know, so I spent a lot of time in that environment. You could say decompressing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just, your mechanism was to, you know, do something.
Yeah, 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 I could tell.
But
yeah,
somebody's like forced themselves to stay on the
ground. That's right. If they stay too much on it without some organic decompression, you can pop a cork.
That's like the retired dentist, full lotus. The teacher said, stay in the full lotus. Your legs will get used to it.
Yeah.
Because really, it hurts.
Yeah, I know.
Snap, snap, snap.
Ooh,
that was the end of his hatha yoga.
There you go. Yeah, yes. You can push this.
Yeah, you knew the tendons just, you know,
yeah,
rubber bands.
Oh boy!
But you have to have a disconnect to not listen to your body.
Yeah,
that much.
Yeah,
right.
You know, it's reflecting on it.
It was your karma that your tendons were going to snap.
Even if someone you respect doesn't do it, you know, it doesn't mean. Yeah.
What did Sam have to say?
He was mostly conducting the interview, but he just sort of weighed in. They have a fun rapport because they've been friends for so many years.
Oh, yeah, they can really get on to it.
They sort of go back and forth.
Yeah.
But they had likened, the dangers of meditation to the dangers of exercise, you know.
Sure.
Not everybody's going to be an ultramarathon runner running 100 miles, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's sort of like feel things out. But,
right.
Yeah, no, I could see, you know, I guess as what happens here is carried out now into my everyday life, it, you know, pokes through there as, you know, they're talking to, so it's, you know, it's fun.
Yeah.
But Sam Harris is a sort of ultra-materialist, right?
I wouldn't say ultra-materialist. I mean, he's spent, you know, months on meditation retreats and such, too. He takes a very practical approach to it, but he's a, you know, PhD neuroscientist and, you know, deals
with things.
He talks about, and one of his books was Enlightened Theme, right? Enlightened Themes.
That's the book that I had.
He upset a lot of people with that book. You know, his own people.
Well, yeah, because he's part of the New Atheist, is a very anti-religion. But then, like,
oh, I see.
It's actually something else.
And he started going soft.
Other than, well, so, yeah, I mean, something else I've been living out there.
Sam, are you, like, celebrating the sacred? Don't tell me. Don't tell me you're doing that.
Not the S word.
Yeah, really.
That's Joseph Goldstein.
Yeah, because he's mentioned his name from time to time. Yeah.
Joey.
Not confused with Jonathan Goldstein, who
right.
does a podcast. Kind of look funny, yeah.
Have you ever met him?
Who?
Joseph Goldstein.
Oh, are you kidding? Did body work on him and cooked food for his guests at his house, and I stole his shoes. We're like...
Did you piss him off?
Yeah. I think I might have pissed him off. Maybe kind of quietly. He is very, you know, well-mannered and sanguine, even in the midst of all kinds of gnarly shit.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a compliment.
Oh, yeah, he's good. Joey's good. You get, you know, you get stuck in an institution for so many years. Well, you become a product of that institution. You kind of institutionalized your own consciousness. Which happens, you know, I mean, you could say there's great sacrifice in a sense of supporting the insight meditation community and the Barry Buddhist, the Barry Center for Buddhist Studies and all of the outreaching and all of the retreats that he's led and stuff. And I mean, it's, you know, and it's an exemplary Buddhist life, really. But wouldn't you give it all up in a heartbeat for the chance to, you know, crack the nut on this shit? I would. I would give up all the institutionalizing, you know, to get down to it, and not necessarily through the beautiful rigor of decades and decades of profound meditation practice. This doesn't give a fuck if you're meditating. It just doesn't care. You want to meditate? Meditate. But this is already this. This is done. It's awake. It's liberated. If the meditation ends up encrusting you in the imagination of being in a condition, aiming for some other preferred or better condition, well, stop meditating as soon as possible and see what this is.
Yeah, that was a thought I had, is that, you know, he potentially has, you know, helped a lot of people as an excellent teacher and this and that, but
absolutely.
It seems like he's really into that at the same time.
Oh, he's an institutional creature of habit, no question about it. And he admits it. I mean, he's got a great sense of humor. He's very wry. He makes no, you know, bones about himself. So that's his karmic lot, and he's done it well, most excellently.
We might have even talked about, too, I forget, maybe at dinner you had mentioned something. Oh, maybe I think it was Francine's comebacks.
Yeah, my comeback, it's going to happen.
But they had talked about,
despite what he said earlier.
They were providing critique of Osho and people that seem to
yes
just sort of jump into like that's all meaningless, it's all blah blah, and then like right. use that to justify their unethical behavior.
Flowers and sex and cars and too. More flowers and more sex and more cars, yeah, sure. And nitrous oxide, yeah.
And they said that was, you know,
where's that?
A danger, so to speak, on the linear path. He talked about some people that. He described as, you know, having fallen through the cracks.
Yeah.
And real early, instead of like pursuing like a regular life and finding whatever fulfillment, they like went to live in Nepal or wherever for, you know, 20, 30 years, and
yeah.
things didn't really turn out. Now they came back, you know, to the, you know, real life, regular physical world. They just
yeah.
aren't able to like piece together a meaningful life like they really wanted to. And
I hear you.
Careful what you get into.
Yeah.
Careful. Thanks for stopping in.
Thank you.
Good to see you again, yeah. Debbie. Yeah. This is you see, when I meditate, it improves. It was meditation referenced. Yes.
Good night. We'll wait till you get to the bottom of the stairs before we start talking about you. What are these?
Honey patties.
They're great, like, because I would just take chocolate and, like, almond butter and honey and put it together, you know, a little snack, and that's, like, what that is. I don't know what the other...
No almond butter, it's just honey and chocolate, I think.
Let's get that. There's three ingredients.
Oh.
Wow.
I thought it said two.
Right.
Oh, that's it. Three.
You go to the Zen Den, try the caveman cups.
Caveman cups
at the Zen Den?
They have sunflower butter in one, or almond butter in one, and... cashew butter in another, but with a dark chocolate on the outside.
Jamie, what is it?
Well, it's an aromatherapy thing.
Well, that's an aromatherapy thing. They left it on.
We should turn it off.
Oh, that's
take a hit of the smoking thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't notice an aroma. Yeah, get a good hit, Mary. What do you think?
It's probably out of infusion.
Maybe they just left water, which is good.
Mm-hmm. What time is it?
Break it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. A bit of fire.
It's only 8:46.
That's time to cut loose.
Yeah.
Let it rip now.
Right.
No holds barred.
Now we can tell the truth.
I recognize the one lady who used to come to meditation.
Mm-hmm.
A few cycles. Sunday morning and Thursday.
Yeah. Oh, we're just reeling them in.
No, that was very, I don't know, I like the group tonight. It might have been the bath, the soaking in the tub before I came.
Oh, good. Yeah. Alone?
Oh, yeah. Not big enough for two.
That's so. Not a polite question.
Well, I just thought maybe next week we'd all join him.
Yeah, would you like some company?
There was a community that like, could hold 12.
Keep that a secret.
One time. Yeah. They had the meetings in this, this giant
in a hot tub.
I had a big ass tub one time.
And that meeting held together. The community held together. I think it was the tub that did it.
So
we're all in hot water together now.
Yeah.
A tub time machine.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
Non time.
Feel a little crusty, we're going to turn the heat up.
Maybe we should start a night sky hot tub collection.
That does sound pretty good.
In Alaska, those people bathe together.
Mm.
It's like those little Japanese style, you know, wooden rounds.
Mm. Gotta do something.
Conserving resources, right?
Well, I'm fresh out. I don't know how to shake this, you know, good behavior mood.
What happened to us?
Maybe try the hat.
That's off.
Put your hat back on.
Yeah, that's off, too.
Put the hat back on.
They may actually come back.
Huh, that would be a mistake.
Well, thank you.
That would be something.
Yeah.
Don't grumbly.
Well, you want to be polite, but you don't necessarily want to hypnotize anybody.
I know, it's a weird thing, because it's like, I feel like you encounter that kind of all day long, framed as other people, but it's really just your own consciousness. It's like, I want to engage in a certain way, but I'm kind of shy about it. Mm. I don't really know how to, so I just play whatever game I'm used to playing that's comfortable. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know.
You mean interacting-wise?
Yeah, but it's really just you, you know? It's not, I mean, you can frame it as, like, all kinds of things, but...